Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPod and MP3 player.
But to understand the future, we have to go back in time.
Hello, the Drill Down listeners. We're taking a break this week, but I didn't want to leave everybody completely high and dry, so I thought this would be a great opportunity to take the new listeners of the Drill Down into the time machine, back into the past, to our very first episode, July 28th, 2007. We had a different, completely different panel back then. It was still myself as producer and host of the show, but we also had Muhammad Saleem and Reg Zaibatsu Sadler as my co-hosts on the panel. These men were at the time giants in the relatively young field of social networking as top users on the site dig.com. This particular show had a different format, slightly different format, where we took one particular topic and we drilled down into that one particular topic in depth. At that time, we didn't really talk about the headlines. So enjoy this interesting glimpse into our past. A little rough around the edges, but you'll see how far we've come since then. Anyway, we're going to return next week as usual with the same crew. So take a listen to this, and thanks for listening. And by the way, to this date, I still have never had a MySpace account. Hello, and welcome to The Drill Down, the podcast where we take a look at some of the most important issues of the week in tech and on the web and how they affect us all. This is our first podcast, so please excuse us if we're a little rough around the edges. My name is Andy Sorsini. I'm film editor and also a submitter on the social news website dig.com.
My name is Reg. I'm an IT consulting company. I've been in the business for, I think, around 15 years now. And I love social networking, and Dig is one of my homes as well.
My name is Muhammad Saleem. I can be found on Dig as well, and I work for Netscape as a Netscape navigator. Apart from that, I'm a blogger, and just fresh out of college, I'm going to be starting social media consulting soon.
And that's actually what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about social networking and what value social networking has, and in particular, Facebook, LinkedIn, other social networking sites. So social networking is like, it's a really hot topic right now.
It's been really hot. I mean, with MySpace, even though they attribute that to kids and like the younger generation. But I mean, it's taken off and it's become like the thing, you know, right now.
And no app, online app, more so than Facebook. I am on Facebook, and I'm also on LinkedIn, and I have to admit that I didn't join Facebook right off the bat. I joined just before they announced their online app, so I'm a late bloomer to Facebook.
Right.
So you don't really know how beautiful it was before they mucked it up, and now it looks like MySpace with all those apps cluttered up the interface.
I knew how beautiful it was for about a week. I actually happen to think that the apps add to it, but the problem is that now there's a glut of those apps, and they all sort of overlap each other in purpose, and some of them are these teeny tiny little niche apps that are like, okay, here's an app to turn somebody into a zombie. It's like, now that kind of smacks of some of that ugliness that MySpace is notorious for.
Right. Now, I mean, without you guys getting too nerdy here, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, MySpace has been the panacea of, like, you know, social networking sites. And we've all heard it's falling out of favor. I mean, it's like, you know, I know people that are still on there. They love it. My space has been king of the hill for ages. There's sites like Zynga. I forgot about a few of the others, but... You know, I mean, Facebook has really taken off. I mean, they've got that huge offer by Yahoo to buy them out. And it looks like they're still up on the blocks because it's like companies like Microsoft are maybe looking to buy them just to get a leg up in the market. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I honestly started using Facebook. Like I said, I just graduated from college a month ago. I joined Facebook just the week it opened up to my college. I heard it from someone. I joined it, and I had previously been aware of MySpace, and I had signed up for MySpace once. I looked at it, and I was like, wow, this crappy interface, incredibly convoluted. Cannot find anyone on here, do not know what's going on, random people wanting to friend me, I do not want this. I look at Facebook, it's a closed network, restricted to your college, you can see who's inviting you, you can look at their profiles, see if you know them or not, be friends with them, and the two things I liked about them was a very clean, very intuitive, almost Apple-like interface. You knew exactly where everything was, worked perfectly, and the closed network. That's why I've been opposed to them opening up, because now I'm getting, you know, 6-7 friends requests per week from people who I have no idea who they are, and I can't see their profiles because they're protected.
Right.
And I just don't want to be friends with them.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the same thing on MySpace. My MySpace profile is basically a blank page because I just had to be on there to see friend stuff. And I get MySpace invites for a blank page by, like, you know, 2 or 3 people a week. So I can see your trepidation there with you know, like Facebook. But, you know, I mean, for sites to grow, just like, you know, even some other sites like Digg or whomever, they add categories, they try and expand to get more audience. So, you know, that's how it happens sometimes.
I have to admit I don't even have a MySpace account. So
oh my god, you're not MySpace?
Well, you know why? You know why? Because
I'll
tell you why. Because I never saw the value of it. Well, the first thing I thought of when I saw MySpace is I looked at it and this is like the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like Web 1.0 with
Andy. You're exactly right, and that's exactly what I thought. But then I'm like, you know, why are thousands of people blogging about MySpace? Why do they have millions of users? Why are they getting these, you know, exorbitant price tag associated with the site? Mm-hmm. There must be something to it. And the day I go in, I look at it, I'm like, what's wrong with people? Mm-hmm. And I did delete my account after, you know, just trying it out for a couple of days.
See, now I think the elegance that you're talking about is Facebook's strong suit. That's where it has it over MySpace. Still, for me, I have a Facebook account and I keep in touch with people on and off in Facebook, but I guess I'm not as deeply involved in the online community on Facebook as I am on, say, Pounce or Twitter.
Well, no, and I'm the same exact way. I mean, it's like I have a Facebook account. I keep in track with a few friends. But maybe it's my naivete. I mean, people have been able to modify, tweak it, make it look really good, and make it work for them. Mm-hmm. The same goes with, like, you know, Pounce or Twitter.
Right. Now Facebook does have some great value, I think. Like, today I just discovered their events mini app that works like a charm, and that's beautiful. So it makes it kind of like a little like the Google app package that they have that does basically the same thing.
I'm sure you guys read there's a study linked onto Boing Boing a couple of weeks back about how the demographic that's using Facebook and the demographic that's using MySpace are entirely different.
Oh, they're huge,
The people using Facebook tend to be wealthier, you know, more educated, whereas people using MySpace tend to be not as wealthy, people from the minorities, not as educated.
Did you read the story? I mean, about the military, they're not letting access from Iraq to MySpace. But to Facebook. Now, they said, you know, like all the like enlisted people are usually on MySpace. Now, all the officers are on Facebook. So it's harder for like the enlisted guys to like do their blogs and talk to people about what's going on versus, you know, like the officers. So, I mean, that's another divide.
That's,
I mean, it's stark. It's
that's
you
almost
shocking me.
So what do you think? Do you think that there is a this a value in Facebook the same way that there was in MySpace before Fox bought it, before News Corp bought it?
Huge value. Huge. I mean, you know, it's the next best thing. So everyone jumps on that bandwagon. You know, I mean, but the problem with Facebook is it's the next best thing for some people, in my opinion, and maybe not others. You know, there are a couple other sites out there that are like a little stronger, a little, maybe more inviting for us tech savvy people.
Now that's a good point you bring up. There's another site, LinkedIn, which is essentially kind of covers the same territory as Facebook and MySpace, but it's like another caste level entirely. LinkedIn seems to me to be for like business people.
Oh yeah, no, it's way up there. You know, and I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, sure.
Just like we're talking about, you know, the different people using MySpace, and then there's, you know, one step up, people using Facebook. LinkedIn is completely up there. It's for, you know, business professionals who are working in an industry who want to connect with more people within their industry and other industries to build business relationships, work on projects. It's like putting up a digital resume and allowing people to tap into that, and through you connect to other people or connect directly to you and build relationships that way. And one of the reasons why I think, you know, Facebook opening up their platform to everyone detracts from the service is, you know, they're diluting their image, which is the exact opposite of what LinkedIn is doing. LinkedIn has, you know, restricted their network to business professionals. They have a clear brand identity in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just because of that, I am on Facebook to connect with my friends, and I'm also on LinkedIn, and I check LinkedIn almost as frequently to, you know, keep up to date on my business relationships.
Okay, but you bring up a good point. You've got Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, and then Twitter, Pounce, Jaiku. To me, it seems like, don't you get a little tired of having to check half a dozen different sites constantly for the same thing? What if, I read this great article in Read Write Web by Josh Catone, Is Facebook Worth the Hype? And I'll link to it in the show notes. But the article talked about Facebook's value could be diluted if MySpace releases an API, and which would allow people to basically customize MySpace way they want to, make MySpace look like LinkedIn and Facebook and work like it. Wouldn't you find more value in one online app that kind of did everything, or do you feel like you want to have those separate niche sites,
I think we would all love to have a mashup, basically, and I'm not promoting that.
But, well, actually, that's not necessarily true. If I could just pipe in for a second, and then you can go ahead. I've always been in favor of specialized networks, and I've written about it multiple times. And it's, you know, like I go to Netscape, talking about socially driven news. I go to Netscape for all my world news and politics content. Mm-hmm. Then I go to Dig for all my technology-related news and some science stuff. And then I go to Reddit to read more a mix of, you know, politics, science, and some offbeat stuff. I think each network individually, if they realize their niche and work towards that, I think specialization can give you better results than just trying to make one mashup.
Well, what I would like is some sort of combination of the two. Like, I wouldn't mind having the variety of the individualized services, but I would like some way on my own end to combine all of that content into one portal. And I wish that were available.
Well, it's like, Andy, it's kind of like, you know, when you're looking for tech news, on any topic or just even general industry news, would you rather go to a technology-specific outlet like, let's say, PC World, or would you rather go to the New York Times website and go into their tech subsection or go to CNN and go to their tech subsection?
You know, I think that's something Google is trying to do. I mean, they're quietly, you know, they're not trying to be too obtrusive, but Google is trying to be the world's best information provider out there. So I can see them sneaking into all these markets with like a vigor.
Yeah, well, I know at one point Google was considering purchasing Facebook until they realized that Facebook wasn't selling. So, and I think who is considering? Microsoft is considering purchasing Facebook right now.
Yeah, no, I've heard that recently. Yes,
you know, I think one of the most underappreciated social networks is Google's own Orkut. You know, people talk about MySpace, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever. Nobody seems to take into consideration Orkut, and that site is huge. They're if I'm not mistaken, they're definitely in the top 10.
I mean, Google is brilliant. I mean, it's like they make acquisitions by the ton. They try and be quiet about it, but it's like I can tell they have a definite path toward the future on social networking.
There isn't an avenue that Google is going to avoid if they can help it. That's for sure.
Okay, guys, you guys are going to hate me for this, but I just brought up the statistics for Orkut, and this is Alexa, so pardon me for that. But they're ranked number 8. Ahead of Wikipedia, Facebook is number 13.
Wow.
So, I did not know that at all.
Okay, I'm stunned.
MySpace is number 6. Baidu, which is the Chinese version of Google, is number 7. And Orkut is number 8. And,
wow.
And for some reason, everyone just seems to ignore that network.
And they're probably keeping it under the radar. I mean, Google is really good with that. I mean, if you even – well, I mean, obviously there was a fervor over like Gmail. But, I mean, with Google Reader, it's still like kind of floating around. People don't really, you know, embrace that.
I know Orkut is huge in South and Central America.
Yeah, in Brazil especially.
Mm-hmm.
If we can go back to Facebook real quickly, I'd like to touch on a couple of more things and you know, get some feedback from you guys with respect to the possibility of a Facebook API, if you guys agree or not, taking into consideration two things, the potential legal problems we're having, and secondly, you know, there are reports coming out saying that Facebook is not a viable marketing platform. The return on investment is as low as 0.04% click-through rate on ads.
I mean, I haven't really seen that, but I mean, I know recently that Mark Zuckerberg, I mean, he talked to, 800 developers at the San Francisco Design Center. And, you know, I mean, they're really working hard to reach out, try and, you know, move up, I guess, the tech-savvy side of Facebook to give offerings to people that want to build on the API and move forward. I think they just acquired the Parquet's WebOS platform.
Right.
The question is, a year from now, will the developers realize that developing an application for Facebook does not yield significant results and they shouldn't be wasting resources on that?
Basically, Facebook acquired something that would allow, like, a web operating system to do everything an OS can do. So, you know, I think they see the fear. Like, you know, Facebook sees it, Google sees it, all these firms see it, where they're worried about Microsoft as an OS. If we can buy it and we can make an OS on your desktop or on your web browser, you know?
Yeah, and that's Microsoft's number one fear, is all of these other online app companies basically replacing them. We're going to stop and take a little break so I can talk about our wonderful sponsor, Audible.com. For the listeners of the Drill Down podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. And the audiobook I'd like to talk about today is The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. This is a new performance narrated by Claire Danes of Romeo and Juliet, and The Hours fame. This is a terrific bit of speculative fiction if you've never read it. Here's the publisher's summary. After a staged terrorist attack kills the president and most of Congress, the government is deposed and taken over by the oppressive and all-controlling Republic of Gilead. Offred, now a handmaid serving in the household of the enigmatic commander and his bitter wife, can remember a time when she lived with her husband and daughter and had a job, before she lost even her own name. Despite the danger, Offred learns to navigate the intimate secrets of those who control her every move, risking her life in breaking the rules in hopes of ending this oppression. Margaret Atwood does a terrific job of proposing a not-so-far-fetched future that's extrapolated from the current climate of hyper-conservatism and bipartisanship that is in our country today. So that book, or any of Audible's other 10,000-plus titles, can be yours for free, as well as a 30-day trial to check out their service. And all you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown for that book. And even if you don't like the service, you get to keep the book after 30 days. So let's get back into our discussion. And we're going to talk a little bit now about Facebook, about the basically the events of The Social Network. But this conversation is taking place at the actual time when it happened. So it's a real kind of glimpse into the past of the whole Winklevoss twins versus Mark Zuckerberg fiasco from the perspective of describing it in the time that it was actually happening. So let's get back into the conversation. Now, Mohammed, to go back to, can you just touch on the legal issues that Facebook is having?
Sure. I don't have the exact timeline up on my screen, but generally the story is there was a group of people at Harvard who were developing a site to connect Harvard students internally, and it was initially called Harvard Connect, later to be renamed as ConnectU, capital C and then capital U at the end. And they hired Mark to work with them on this project. Yeah. And a few days – and he doesn't say anything. A few days later, he registers the Facebook.com, and the work he was doing here, he transfers to this other site and starts making a competitive social networking site, and then leaves them, and then this site ends up becoming really huge, and they feel they're entitled to either a share of it or he should be shut down.
And there's so much money out there. I mean, who knows if he got bought off? I mean, we can't speculate, but it almost sounds like it.
The thing is, it doesn't seem like they're after the money, because they've had this suit, from way like a long time ago, before Facebook was anything even close to the size it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So they're more after the ideology behind it, or
right.
Just the fact that he ripped them off.
Right, it's a principal issue.
Google actually offered $2.3 billion for him. So, I mean, that was back in 2006. Now I heard the valuation is like around $8 billion. So, I mean, I don't know.
If Facebook does get purchased, it could end up being one of those purchases like when Google purchased YouTube, where...
Right.
Where you start to wonder, YouTube is bleeding all of this bandwidth and it's costing them...
They're bleeding bandwidth. They're bleeding lawsuits with Viacom. They're going back and forth. They're just trying to protect their turf. Now, Google has the money to do that.
Of course.
But, I mean, it's like the same thing goes. Whoever picks up, Facebook, where's the value? I mean, is it cheaper to buy it, or is it cheaper to recreate the wheel?
What it seems like is this: the new web mindset seems to be we buy the page views, and later on we're going to decide how we monetize them. We saw that with YouTube, astronomical growth. Google buys them out, still haven't really figured out a way to monetize it. We saw it with MySpace, which is making some kind of money, but nowhere close to or the kind of money they paid for it.
Exactly.
So if somebody does buy Facebook, the exact same thing is going to happen. They're buying the page views. They're buying the average internet visitor's time, however many hours people spend on Facebook, but they still do not know
They don't know what they're going to do with it.
Those pages into money.
Right.
No, no. I mean, I agree completely. And what's funny is, like, with hindsight, their tech sites, it's even worse because I don't see ads on my computer. I haven't seen one in years, so I don't know what one looks like. I have host files. I've got ad blockers. All the people in the know that, you know, do. So, you know, where are they going to get their revenue from? Same thing that happens with, like, network TV. It's like with DVRs. It's like people skip over. So, you know, it's a big deal for these companies, especially, like, you know, Facebook. You know, how are they going to get their revenue?
Exactly. I think we pretty much covered the gamut on this issue. Let's wrap it up a little bit with a couple of links. Do you guys have any stories or links that you want to talk about?
You know, I actually do.
Do you?
I've got one. It's on PC Mag, at PCMAG.com. It's a Beyond Social Networking.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think you'll find it on Dig. I think I threw it up there. But, I mean, it's like it'll sort of give you, like, a little bit beyond what they're doing right now with sites that you guys mentioned, like LinkedIn, Last.fm. I have on their MOG photo log. And great site, great place to go. Just go to PCMag.com. And no, I don't know these people that well, so it's not a commercial.
Well, send me the link, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a link. It could be a story that you came across this week that really kind of sprung out for you.
No. I have a story, and I think this is one of the biggest stories to come out in the past 24 hours or so, and that's Ask.com launching this Ask Eraser.
Oh, brilliant. That is a brilliant one. Thank you for that.
100% private search engine does not record a single thing. They're not storing anything on their servers. And they're not tracking you in any way. And this is very significant because if you go back into Google history, Google has time and again, pissed off the privacy watchdogs, EFF, even the government, because they store your data
right
on their servers and then they use it to analyze search trends. And I think what Ask is doing is incredible. It's going to get them a lot of attention. It's going to generate a lot of goodwill. And I think that they're going in the right direction if they really want to compete with Google.
Well, I mean, Google has officially an 18-month retention policy.
Right.
Which is, like, you know, totally bogus. I mean, we know they own it for years, in my opinion. But for Ask.com to come out and say, it's like, hey, if you are a pedophile and you want to search, I know I hate to say this, but I mean, and no, I'm not. I've got four. Oh, never mind.
Oh, that's...
But all I'm saying is, like, that's where you go to ask.com if you're, like, a bad person.
Ask.com, the pedophiles search engine.
Right, exactly. The site for all pedophiles on the planet. You go over there, you're all set, you know?
The interesting thing is, even
it's
when.
It's a big deal, though. And I'm not talking about pedophilia. I'm talking about
yeah. Oh.
We lost him.
We lost him.
Too much alcohol.
He's still on. I mean, we just don't hear him. Maybe we'll come back. But let me talk about the link that I saw that I wanted to talk about was – this is a story in Wired called FBI Secret Spyware Tracks Down Teen Who Made Bomb Threats. And it's basically...
Oh, I read that.
Yeah. It's basically about this kid who was making these bomb threats toward his school. And the FBI surreptitiously sent him a program, which... And I still don't know why he opened it. Why would you open a program in an attachment? So they must have made it really appealing for him to open. But the software captures your IP address, your MAC address, a list of your open ports and running programs, and then basically just sits and hides and waits and collects all that information. Mm-hmm. And so they were monitoring him issuing these threats back and forth to his school. And the threats started to escalate, and then they stepped in. I don't know how to feel about this because on the one hand, I'm glad that a potential Columbine was avoided, but on the other hand,
That's on the other hand, what's there preventing them from doing this to everyone?
Exactly.
They can make up an excuse and go in and invade anyone's privacy and say, oh, we're preventing a potential Columbine.
Right, right.
I hate to say it like that, but that's the reality.
Right. And then it becomes like Minority Report, where you get convicted for the crime that you have yet to commit.
Or it becomes like the Patriot Act.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Are we all here? Okay, so what...
So you guys were rambling about...
Yeah, what happened? What happened is that we lost Reg on the Skype, and now we're all back together. So we were just talking about this article in Wired where the FBI basically sent secret spyware to this teenager who was making these bomb threats.
So I mean, it's basically the FBI police versus the bad guys with that stuff, right?
Right. But, I mean, what do you consider the bad guys? Do you consider the bad guys the kids who are planning to blow up their school,
I live in Colorado, and believe it or not, Littleton High School is right down the street. Not that close. But, I mean, where they had Columbine, it's
right.
Like right around the corner. So, I mean, it's a big deal, you know, for me, and the whole thing is, it's like, okay, I don't mind the government looking into our affairs. I understand it.
Uh-huh.
But I think they go a little further with, you know, not only spyware. I mean, spyware, yes, if it's a major, like, drug deal or murder case or something like that, that's fine. Same goes for surveillance or tapping the phone. But the Patriot Act that we have now and, you know, the no-knock warrants, I don't get all political, but I think it's over the top. I think it is turning us into more like a police state than what we should be.
Right. Where do you draw the line?
So, yeah, I mean, where to draw the line? Law enforcement should have tools. They should probably have key loggers. If they get a warrant from a judge, which, you know, right now you don't have to do with the Patriot Act.
Right, which they did in this case with the kid.
Right. Now, yeah, if you have the warrant from a judge... Yeah, go ahead, do a key logger. Tap into the computer system, you know, watch their IP traffic, do whatever. If they're bad people and you know it and you can, and the judge agrees with you, yeah, that's great. If not, no. If they don't go through those procedures. That's the problem that we've had with, like, the Patriot Act and all the stuff we're doing right now. They're not going through judges and procedures. So... I'm talking about on the lower local level, not talking about the federal. I'm not going to argue that. I can't do anything about that. But, you know, on the local level, yes, I think they should.
Muhammad?
Well, I'm just a little iffy on this. If they do have enough evidence already and they have a warrant, then it's fine. But it does set a precedent. And what prevents them for asking for more, less stricter legislation, more powers, how much evidence constitutes enough. I just don't know how far they can push it.
Right,
and it scares me.
No, it's completely frightening because it's, you know, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I mean, if you guys have talked to me and if you see my post, you know, I'm a little left. I'm not a right-wing guy. I'm a little left, and... you know, I worry about the scope of government, how reaching it will be, because it's like, it's just like when I drive down the street in my H2. I've been pulled over so many times for doing like maybe 47 and 45. I hate to say it, but it's true. Because I'm, you know, I look like a younger black man in a really nice car.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I mean, it's happened to me a lot of times. And I'm not blaming on the system. You need to do profiling like that, you know.
No, but I think they're right in pulling you over. Not only are you speeding, but you're single-handedly causing global warming.
Well, you know, I would go for the Prius, but, you know... Like Al Gore's son said, you can only do a fucking 100 miles an hour on that thing. So.
not to mention, Reg, you're probably driving drunk, too. So.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's me. No, I got it. I have a driver for that. Don't leave the house drunk.
I think I think we've pretty much covered everything we can for one episode. But do you guys want to give a shout out to your own where you guys can be contacted on the great interwebs?
Just check out my profile on Dig. You can find me there. I'm at mas@neotech.gmail.com,
we'll put the links in the show notes.
That's all.
And Muhammad?
My website is just my name. It's MuhammadSaleem.com. Links to all my social media profiles and all the sites that I blog for are all on there.
Great. I'll link my email address in the show notes and also my Dig profile so that you can see what I'm digging.
Before we leave, I just wanted to say iPhone at least once on the show and and ask Reg what he's drinking tonight.
It's called a dry creek. And I actually have a wife in the room. She's in home.
Hello.
So you hear wife of Zaibatsu.
And I want him back now.
Okay, we're about to
exit.
Yeah,
that's a good thing for me, guys. Let me tell you.
We'll reconvene again next week with another exciting topic. This has been the Drill Down, and we'll see you next week.